And welcome back to another edition of Tony Talk right here on Scoops with DannyMac.com. I'm Fox 2 Sports Director Martin Kilcoyne, along with the Hall of Famer Tony La Russa. Our weekly chats presented by Marie Davila Senior Living, Victory Men's Health, Greenville University, and Triad Bank, located in Frontenac. St. Louis is buzzing about a Game 7 in hockey. A thrilling double overtime win. St. Louis native gets the game-winning goal, and I thought I'd start there, Tony. Game 7s, because some of the players, the Blues players, were joking that we'll overhype it and talk it up, and I don't think you could overhype a Game 7. I know you've been in some big ones. What are those memories for you, and is it just that, is it magical when it's a Game 7?
No, absolutely. I don't think you can talk enough about the expectation and the actual experience of being part of a, you know, win or go home. You know, you dream about it. I mean, as a player, as a kid, you grow up thinking about, you know, it's Game 7 and you come up to bat the ninth inning and you win the game. And I can remember through a lot of my managing career, got to the playoffs enough and then didn't get to the final game. And I remember looking at my friend like Jim Leland, you know, 97, he had Game 7. And Tom Kelly, both of his wins were Game 7. But there towards the end of, you know, the last, you know, third of my career, I can remember 2001, you know, the Game 5 of the Division Series between us and Arizona. The great Schilling and Morris matchup. And then we had one in 2011, Game 5 of the Division Series. But the Game 7s, you know, we had one in 2011 and 2006 with the Mets for the championship series. And I think the fans might enjoy this quickly. When we were playing the Mets, you know, we left St. Louis and we were up 3-2. And we had Karp pitching Game 6. So we were the favorites. And we were all very disappointed. Their guy, I forget the right-hander's name, we just didn't do anything against him. Karp pitched well. We just couldn't score. And guys, the clubhouse was really quiet after Game 6 because we thought we had blown a great chance. And I can remember going in there, you know, you always try to figure out something to say. And a lot of times when I would do it, after I said, well, that wasn't good. But this one here, I walked in and I really pumped up the opportunity. Yeah, it's a tough loss. It would be nice to be celebrating right now. But the opportunity to play a Game 7 is a lifelong dream for most athletes, whether it's, you know, basketball or hockey or baseball. And instead of moping about the game we didn't win, let's look forward to this experience. It'll be one that you talk about the rest of your life. So one of the things that I did was I asked Jim Edmonds and Scott Rowland, both had been part of Game 7 in the 2004 championship series, and for them to talk about their experience going in and how exciting it was. And then I capped it off with the next time, who, as you know, was part of Game 7 with the Angels in 2002 with the Giants. They really added the touch from the player side of how you wake up in the morning and you're all fired up and you know this is it could be a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And then I remember my punchline was, look, the whole thing you want to do is you want to get into this thing and have no regrets. You want to just get excited about playing in it, feel the urgency. We a lot of times, to create urgency, we say, let's pretend it's the seventh game of the World Series. And, well, here you don't have to pretend. This is the seventh game. And you're going to feel this urgency. So whatever it takes to get well, and it's like I remember the point everybody laughed, I said, you know, if you want to leave the ballpark tonight and go home and go to the hotel and sit there and not do a thing, that's okay. But if you want to go out all night, you know, the city that never sleeps, if that's what gets you ready for Game 7, you just don't want to have any regrets. So I think it's just a wonderful experience. And, very, very pleased for the Blues and for the fans of St. Louis that they had the great outcome.
And my standard answer when people say greatest game you've ever been to, I've always gone back to that 2006 Game 7 NLCS. It was at Shea, and it's, you know, the Molina homer, but I remember interviewing Adam Wainwright on the field, the game's on Fox, and after I said, what were you thinking in the ninth? And he said, my only thought was, when I came out there, don't get to Beltran. And what happens? He gets to Beltran. Yeah. and the place is going nuts, and we're in the tunnel getting ready to go on the field, and I'm thinking, oh my God, this is going to be one of the worst losses I've ever covered, and it's roaring loud, and then it just goes silent. I just think the emotions in there, because the season's on the line. You're always a little tense during the game. Was that one of the more anxious games you were sitting in the dugout for?
Well, absolutely, because, you know, we had, in 04, we had gotten to the World Series finally as a Cardinal and lost, and we're looking for the next opportunity. And that was, I mean, you talk about something that's Hollywoodish. It's in New York, you know, a very hostile Mets fan. They're very excited about their club. I mean, they remember that night when our clubhouse kids brought our bats out, the equipment, they booed the bat boys. So it was very hostile. It was rainy, remember? It was dreary. I mean, it had all the elements of October baseball. And the one thought that I had from a strategic part was, the later you get into a game where it's tied, a heavy advantage gets to the home team, because, like, say, we get them out in the ninth inning. If we don't score in the ninth inning, we have to get them out in the ninth, and then to get in the tenth if we happen to score. So if there was ever an advantage, they could walk off to win, or knowing after they got us out in the ninth inning, tenth inning, whatever, that we had no hope, you know. So, and then you look at Wagner, their great reliever, and you thought, boy, you know, we're at a disadvantage, and in one swing, Yachty, you know, made it happen for us. And then you got to, like, the tip of, oh my gosh, we're a 2-run lead and three outs away, and immediately, you know, Wainwright gets two guys on base, and now you're sweating, and it got to that final confrontation, which is one of the great moments in playoff history. The curveball that Wainwright threw to Beltran still is replayed forever and ever. I mean, that's just like a movie, you know. That's just what you try to create, and that's, but when it actually happens, yeah, that it can only happen in a Game 7 situation. You're exactly right. What Blues went through last night was really historic and exciting, and you cannot over-exaggerate how great it is to be a part of it.
In Game 7, 2004, it was the day after the Edmonds home run in extra innings, which was a historic Game 6. Then Edmonds has a huge catch, rolling homers. You beat Roger Clemens, which I think added to the lore of that particular Game 7. But in a number of these games, Jeff Suppan factored in, and I think it was Jim Edmonds who said to me once, that guy has the biggest balls I've ever seen, because he goes out there, and it doesn't matter what kind of stuff he's got, he doesn't care, he doesn't flinch. And Soup's legacy as a Cardinal forever cemented because of his moments in just in big games. And I think if people looked at the career resume and didn't look at his postseason, they'd be like, wait a minute, this guy, he was a huge big game pitcher, but he was.
It's a great point to bring up, because it's always good to give credit where credit's due. And in 04, he's matched against Roger Clemens. I don't think the bettors were going to bet us over Roger. And Roger pitched very well. It's just that, you know, Albert got a double to start it, and this guy came through with the big 3-run homer. Soupy held him down, and just as impressively, I mean, that game was 1-1 in New York, that game 7, on the road, at least at home. You know, we were playing at home in 04, but this is on the road. And if you remember, after the great catch by the left fielder, Indy Chavez, that robbed Roland a home run, the next inning they had runner at third base with nobody out, and Soup stranded the guy with a pop of a strikeout and a flyout. So, yeah, Jeff Suppan was money, and, you know, he was really a cool customer. He was just not going to be distracted by his significance. He just went about and worked the process.
One of these players so significant in a lot of these big games, still doing it for the Cardinals, still at a high level, Yadier Molina, as of the other night, and I know this is, you know, at this pace, McGuire used to laugh at us. We would say that 98, hey, at this pace. And I think even Mock was at this pace. But we love to look at projected numbers. Molina was on pace for 116 RBIs. I know that's not going to keep up. But we've been talking a little bit. You look at him physically. A lot of players get older. They get heavier, not as great a shape. He seems to be in better shape than he ever was. And when he first came up, we all thought, well, he'll be a great fielder. He's going to be a gold glove potential. He just won't hit. And you had him, and I think he was, you know, 1-for-50 or whatever it was, and you said, he'll be fine. And I think people were a little restless, but you could tell even then he was working his tail off. I'm sure you're not surprised, but but he's still at a high level, and his hitting has come. I mean, over the years, he's become a really good hitter.
Yeah, there's a lot to say about Yadier Molina as far as being a championship offensive and defensive player. Early on, he showed that he had this intuitive IQ, very high IQ, for how to handle each pitcher. And the game situation was something that never spooked him, no matter how tight it was. He's a very cool thinker, and he had the courage of his conviction. He also, by the way, will admit that he had the help early on from Mike Matheny, who taught him a lot of the preparation. But he had Dave Duncan working with him and preparing him. But just when you talk about the hitting side, I can remember in 05 when he became the everyday catcher, he got off to a slow start, and it was just one quote that I still hear about from time to time. He got off to a slow start. There were two guys on base in the bottom of the ninth inning, and he came to bat, and I didn't pinch hit for him. He made it out. And, of course, as the press would do, you know, there was a good question to ask, hey, did you think about pinch hitting for Molina in the ninth? And I love when they ask that. I say yes, and then I don't say anything more. Because, yeah, I thought about it, but I didn't do it. Well, you should always ask, yo, why didn't you? You know, so, and I said, well, first of all, he's going to hit. But I said, he's so good defensively, this was my quote, that he could go 0 for the season, and he's our catcher. And then that was the end of the conference. I go to my office, knock on the door, Yadi walks in, he says, don't worry, Skipper, I know go 0 for the season, I'm going to get some hits. And, you know, we laughed about it. But the point was that he was coming up. And this is what you evaluate as an organization. You know, player development would talk about his stroke. He had a legitimate stroke where he was going to get base hits. And then what he proved early and throughout his career, you look at what he does in October, he's got a very high batting average in his playoff chances, because not only did he have a stroke, but he was so good under pressure that he was a guy that could get the big hit as a young guy, and that's continued to right now.
And as we visit, you're set to go to the White House, Red Sox celebrating their World Series title. I'm curious how many times you've been there, and we're both a little older. I remember when teams would win the World Series or they'd win the Super Bowl, they'd actually, on the broadcast, they'd say, oh, guess who's on the phone, and they'd hand you the phone. I don't know if you ever experienced that, but how many visits to the White House overall?
Well, this would be my, the fourth one. The first one was 89 when the A's won, and President Bush, you know, the father hosted us in the Rose Garden. In 06, I was honored to, again, be part of a club that went. I had to back out at the last minute because of a family thing. Elaine was taking one of our daughters to a migraine clinic, and it just coincided with the same day, so I had to stay back and dog and cat sit. And then in 2011, we had the visit, and I was there. So this will be, it'll be the fourth time or the third time I go. And, you know, it should be something that's a tremendous honor, and it's become, like so much in today, it's become political and what's wrong and what's right, and it really bothers a lot of us that, this thing has gotten to where priorities have gotten shifted in whatever it was, whether it was 09 or 06 or 11, and now in 2019, it really is immaterial who the president is, because, man, if you take a team up there, you're going to have differences of opinion as far as your politics. It's all about the honor. You know, there's some symbols in our country, like the White House, like the flag, like the anthem, that represent the opportunities and the specialness of the freedoms that we have. And we should never, ever get those things intertwined in the politics or controversies. And so, you know, I know there's some guys are not going. A lot of guys are going tomorrow. But I really wish it was a true team thing and it didn't come down to making decisions about, you know, are you for or are you against? Because to me, if you don't go, you're against what the United States represents, and if you go, you're for it. It's like standing up at the anthem and pledging, looking at the flag. If you don't do this, it's not it's not whatever your protest is. It's you're disrespecting what the country represents. But that's not the way it's going to be. But it'll be a great honor. And the ones that don't go, I think, are making a mistake.
And my concern is a lot of folks who bow out and, you know, to each his own. But my concern is a lot of it is outside pressure. Like they might even, and I don't know this for a fact, but some of the folks who say, all right, I'm not going, maybe inside are thinking, boy, I'd love to go. It's an opportunity of a lifetime. But people are going to be mad at me if I do. I sense that there's a little bit of outside influence. So people are saying no, just to appease a certain crowd.
Well, I can't agree with you more. I mean, you know, the Boston Red Sox are a very high-profile professional sports organization, and the stuff that's being written and discussed by the media and folks, you know, with that have, you know, maybe politicians about who's going and not going, I mean, they're really, really pushing this thing way beyond the simplicity of you're in this country, we have freedoms and opportunities, and anything that honors all those values and those opportunities, you know, are worth repeating. I mean, it's just like they look at there are some Latin American players not going, and I think maybe David Price and Mookie Betts are calling it, well, only the whites are going to the White House. You know, that is, I mean, that's pushing it way too far. And I've seen articles where, you know, they're trying to create guilt and a division between members of our team for those that go and those that don't go. And I do know that there's a very healthy attitude starting from our ownership and President Sam Kennedy and Dave Dombrowski throughout the team. I've been here with them in Baltimore. The team understands that they had choices to make, and some guys chose not to go, and they're still a team. They're a team today, and they will be a team Friday when we get back together to play Seattle.
And a reminder, you can communicate directly with the Hall of Fame manager. It's TonyTalkQuestions@gmail.com. Make sure you subscribe as well. That way, this show, each week, these episodes, which have been so well received because of Tony's great stories, they'll be sent directly to you. So whether it's Google or iTunes, get signed up for the subscription. We'll come back and have your questions for Tony. One of our great sponsors on Tony Talk, Triad Bank, the neighborhood friendly bank located in Frontenac on Clayton Road. They're just west of Lindbergh. Real easy access off Highway 64. Get to Lindbergh and you are there. Founded in 2005, wide range of commercial and personal banking services. And how about this? They actually have people behind the counter, people there ready to greet you, ready to help you. Business owners looking to expand, talk to the bank based in St. Louis. Those decisions are being made here. How frustrating is that? You're trying to get a loan for your business and the decision is made in New York or Los Angeles, not with Triad Bank. You can find out more at triadbanking.com. Home equity lines of credit, 5-star rated bank, $360 million in assets. Check them out, triadbanking.com. Since 1960, serving the families of St. Louis, Marie Davila Senior Living. At the corner of Clayton and Wideman Road, the beautiful fountain greets you for the 22-acre campus. Full range of senior living, independent living at the Villa Estate, skilled nursing, memory care, they have it all. Spacious dining room, salon, transportation around town, exercise and pool, private rooms, hands-on care. You're not a resident at Marie Davila, you are considered a guest. Fred and Mary Kay Weezahan and their sons live on site. It is family run and it has that family feel. You've heard Tony and I talk about how this was home for the legendary Red Shandings for many years. He was also on the board and helped the original owners start Marie Davila back in 1960. MarieDavila.com, we suggest you go online and schedule a tour. Less than an hour from St. Louis, it's Greenville University. Founded in 1892, this liberal arts institution offers pre-med, offers online student involvement. Yeah, that's right. They'll get involved in local businesses, immersed in the community, a great little town of Greenville, Illinois, less than an hour from St. Louis if you're looking to get away for college, but maybe don't want to go too far. It's right up the road from St. Louis. Great professors, really a great experience. Kids involved in the athletics, but again, everybody is really immersed in what they're doing on the campus at all times. Greenville.edu for more information about this great institution. Once again, it's Tony Talk right here on Scoops with DannyMac.com. Don't forget those emails each week, TonyTalkQuestions@gmail.com. A listener in Rhode Island, a Cardinal fan in Rhode Island, he's almost in Sox territory there, Was curious about the front office of the Cardinals because you've stayed involved in baseball and wondering whether it was ever an opportunity with the Cardinals or whether you would have liked to have done that. Expand on that a little bit about maybe ever having that chance to be with the Cardinals front office.
Yeah, it's a good question. I appreciate it. I think when I retired, it was really important to do something else, and I had the opportunity with Commissioner Selig to join Major League Baseball. So I think it was really appropriate to just go in, a kind of neutral position with Major League Baseball. Never did have the conversations with Bill or Mo about staying around. And then when I had a chance, being neutral was a little foreign to me, and I had a chance to go to Arizona. I did take that, but if you look at what's happening at that time with the Cardinals, I mean, they're continuing to be competitive and going into the playoffs. So the answer is, never really have talked to the Cardinals about it, but I never have really felt that it was an appropriate or smart thing for us to discuss because it wasn't necessary.
Another question about getaway lineups. Boy, on the radio, we joke about it a lot, but is there such a thing in a manager's mind as a getaway lineup? They'll look up and say, well, let's see, they've already won the series, or it's a Thursday day game, they're hitting the road, and boy, three of the regulars are out. Give me an idea if a manager has a getaway lineup in mind. I think the beef of fans is, sure, you got to sit a guy here or there, but why do they sit them all the same day?
Great question, and that's one that you fight over as a manager. And what you try to do as best you can, I mean, in St. Louis, when you got 3 million people coming to see you, it would always make me feel guilty if it's a day that a fan is going to see that game and comes from far away or even close, and some of our special guys are not playing. So as a manager, you try to rest intermittently. You may rest one or two guys, but not three or four, if you can help it. So at least the fans will see a representative lineup. And then you hope that they understand the 162-game season is so demanding, and especially if you have your better players who are out there under tremendous pressure to perform, where especially the position players, they need a mental break as much as a physical break. And sometimes these long stretches where you're playing 15 in a row or 20 in a row, you just can't wait to get on the road. And that's ideally, you give them a day off on the road. But sometimes you get into a box and you do have an obligation to get the most out of your club. And you will look at a guy who maybe just played extra innings or it's been really hot, and you know that it would be not in the team's best interest to send that player or players out that day. So very often, you will rest in a day game after a night game. And a lot of times it's a Sunday, which is a great day to be a Cardinal fan to come on a weekend. And like I say, sometimes you maybe rest them on Friday, so you play Saturday, Sunday. Or you rest a couple guys on Saturday, so that somebody's playing on Sunday. But I remember in the old days, man, you have Albert, you have McGuire. When they don't play at home, fans will look around and say, hey, wait a minute now, I want to see my star.
And the truth is, you never know. There was a lineup this year, one of the day games, I think it was at home, and we all said, oh my God, what a crap lineup. And they scored 11 runs and won the game. So the truth is, you don't always know. A little Redbird roulette, and again, we love to go kind of random, but this guy, he flashed for a minute. We had fun with him. John Rodriguez, and I think what people remember most is he named himself J-Rod, which you said you can't give your own nickname. But he had a couple of moments there. What's your blink when I say that name?
Well, I think, J-Rod, he always said he was money because his role was he was a pinch hitter and a spot player, and he was successful. He was a very tough out as a pinch hitter. And if you gave him a game, once every 2 weeks, a little bit like Aaron Miles, they had this attitude where they embraced the opportunity, and they were going to be very aggressive. One of the ways to be really good off the bench is you don't sit there and get yourself all negative because, hey, how can I do anything because I'm not playing much? And Johnny went up there, and he convinced himself that one at-bat that he would take in a tough pinch-hitting role that he was 100% ready for, and he could do very good. And we always admired not only his clutch ability off the bench, but he was like one of our top cheerleaders on the bench. When he wasn't playing, he was pulling hard for his teammates.
We appreciate all of our sponsors, Greenville University. In fact, they did a great thing. They had senior skip day, but instead of skipping school, the kids up in the Greenville, Illinois area went around and helped with community service. Shout out to them for doing that. Marie Davila Senior Living, where our buddy Red Shandins lived for so many years. Also, Triad Bank. They're on the web at triadbanking.com. And Victory Men's Health. I know Amy and the gang over there, and their motto is to be you again. And a lot of machismo men say, oh, I don't want to deal with my testosterone, but it's amazing the difference they can make. And I know you've gotten to know those folks a little bit.
One of the beauties of being in St. Louis for 16 years is that you found out that a lot of people there were really good people, and they became like family. And you're talking about Amy and, you know, Bill Draghi, you know, folks like that became very special friends and got to know how sharp they were business-wise, too. So it doesn't surprise me that Victory Men's is doing very well, and they've opened another store, probably have three or four of them, but before long.
VictoryMen'sHealth.com. Next week, Friends of Tony update. Next week, we'll hear how the White House visit went, and also a recent dinner in Chicago. If I'm not mistaken, it was Jocketty was there, maybe Jim Tomei, maybe Jim Leland, and maybe even George Will. We'll get into that next week. It's Tony Talk here on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. I got to tell you, Tony, people are loving the segments, and it's honestly, it's all because of you. Appreciate your time.
Well, again, it's going very fast, and I look forward to doing it next week.